Dr. Offren, the world is shocked by India's COVID crisis. India is choking 300,000, 400,000 cases per day, lack of oxygen, hospital beds, medicines. How did we reach this point? What do you think is the reason for this sudden upsurge of COVID cases that's led to complete mayhem in the region?
It's important to note that early on, sometime February, life has reopened, economic and social activities reopened. Also, we also saw that there was not much compliance with COVID appropriate behaviors. And that gave the virus an opportunity to continue to spread. So I think that's where we are. The reasons are multifactorial. There are many, many reasons for this. But basic is that we gave the virus a chance to keep transmitting.
Do you think it's a double mutant that's led to the spike of COVID-19 in India?
There is some evidence of variants such as the B.1.17 as being more contagious, as more transmissibility. And so is the B.1.617, which has double mutations. But that alone, there's not much proof yet in terms of if it's the single driver of this rapid rise in cases. As I said, there were also other factors that allowed the virus to continue to transmit, to continue to infect other people. And that's because COVID-appropriate behaviors were not being followed. I think this is an important message that we have a responsibility in curbing the spread. And more than the variants, the original SARS-CoV-2 is also still the dominant virus. So in that sense, these measures are still very valid and continue to be effective. So that needs to be done.
Somewhere the people had got careless, but this sharp spike has also overwhelmed the healthcare system of many cities and the shortage of basic health facilities. Now, we have seen reports of similar shortages of hospital beds and medical supplies in developed countries like Europe, like US during their struggle with COVID-19. Do you think India's problems are the same as those countries, or are they anyway different?
I think the difference is in terms of scale. The pattern of how this has spread, of the waves, whether it was in Europe or the US, was fairly similar. But the scale is very different. The density of the population is also probably a factor for this. That's why, if you notice, as you have said, it's the spikes are in the metros. If you notice also early in the weeks as these cases were rising, the system was able to absorb, whether it was for testing, because that scaled up fast last year. Extra beds were also being put up last year, and which are now you're also seeing. So it's a scale issue, the scale of the surge to the scale of the response. I think that would be the big difference between these countries that have seen the surge. But what is also important is that there's another tool for the intervention, and that's the vaccines. So India has been able to vaccinate 165 million as of today.
So how long do you think the second wave will last in India? Do you think India should start preparing for the third wave already?
I wouldn't actually go into certain predictions. All the modelings, all those theories before have always been debunked by this virus. The virus is so adaptable and it's adapting so fast that no model was able to predict this. There is no problem with keep on preparing. It is a cycle. It's a spiral of preparedness, readiness, response, recovery, preparedness, readiness, response, recovery. It's a whole cycle. You don't stop. We have to be ahead of the game. I think that's an important point, because we know how to deal with it. The tools are the same. Consistent testing, contact tracing, in this case, active case finding, early treatment, proper treatment, because if you're test early, you're a mild case and you don't move towards a moderate or severe case. The COVID-appropriate behaviors, the 3 Ws, wear a mask, wash your hands, wash your distance, and vaccinate. You have the full arsenal of ammunition to fight the virus. It's a matter of now getting this through very consistently at the scale that it's moving.
There have also been studies recently that the second wave will peak in the first or second week of May. What is WHO's assessment on this?
Well, as I said, I wouldn't even try and predict. We are still seeing an increase. And what is the focus now is to give good messaging. We need the public. The goal is to engage the public in the response very well.
As you said, the vaccination has now been rolled out for everyone above 18 years of age. Do you think vaccination is the only way to deal with the situation like this as we're witnessing in India? And is India well equipped to handle mass vaccination at this stage?
India is one of the countries that does mass immunization very, very well. Even if you look at how the US, when they started, they were not used to doing mass vaccination campaigns because this is what they do. It's more of a routine. It is in this scale that India has that, not just the tradition or history with it. It has an operational mechanism around it. And that's why the launch on January 16 was very well done. To your question, is vaccination the only way out? As I was already saying, it's if the virus is spreading multifactorially, there are multiple factors also on how to curb its spread and end this pandemic. Vaccination is just one of them. The idea to have herd immunity is not to have everyone get infected, because you will get more cases, more deaths. That's not the way to go. To achieve herd immunity is to get everyone vaccinated. That's one way. But as you are doing that, I think that's a caveat. As you are doing that, people should really follow COVID-appropriate behaviors.
So what has been WHO's response to the current COVID crisis? How is the organization helping with the efforts to combat the current wave?
So I think what is important to note is the network of experts we have in the country. We have 2,600 in place in 23 states and union territories. So that's the network of staff that, well, have dealt with public health goals, whether it's ending polio and now in the process of also ending TB. So we tap on this extremely huge technical and operational resource. We have repurposed also some of our staff who are experts in health systems or, as I said, TB or neglected tropical diseases who are in the field to be able to support this whole response. It's all hands on deck for us. So that's one. The critical gaps I mentioned are also the areas that we're trying to intervene. No matter how small, 4,000 oxygen concentrators, we're wanting a pipeline that can come through this to fill this supply need. Health facilities that can be attached possibly to existing health facilities to augment their bed space. Many of our response areas will continue in terms of, maintaining essential health services. Risk communication, that's another one. There is a joint campaign with Facebook and WHO India and UNICEF India for these mission critical messages. The support for laboratory supplies, because that's another critical gap. So we're sending through 400,000 test reactions for RT-PCR, including the other consumables that come with it, and possibly create a pipeline for that as well. As the need goes, the response has to be very dynamic. Of course, infection prevention and control, another important part, especially if you're creating a temporary health facility. But the first priority is filling critical gaps.